does it mean you don't love me anymore?
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. Been a good day. Been a good show. I interviewed Art Holliday from KSDK for about an hour today. We've been long-term friends, and we're going to play it for you tomorrow at 4 p.m. Really, really good stuff. So if you're a fan of local news or art personally, tune in tomorrow at 4 p.m. to hear that. Nate Gatter is our guest today. We're going to talk some sports, couple of things. First, I just found out that Nate is a recent WashU Law grad. Congrats.
Oh, thank you. Huge accomplishment. That's very kind of you.
Yeah. Secondly, I thought you were someone else. When I first, I'm not going to say who, I'll tell you off the air, but when I was first like, oh, who's that guy? And they're like, oh yeah, he's with Chris, and this is his name, and here's what he does. I thought you were a different broadcaster who I don't like. And so I apologize if I've ever been dismissive of you.
No, I don't think so. We've never really formally met until today. I don't think we ever had any negative interactions.
And so when you filled in for Kev and Paulie, and they're like, oh, it's Nate Gatter. I'm like, ah, this son of a bitch. And and even before I didn't realize, even before I was hip to you weren't the guy I thought you were, I was like, he won me over. Like, you were excellent filling in for these guys.
Oh, I appreciate that. So you're telling me not only did you like it, but you started out assuming that you didn't like me and you liked the show anyway.
Yeah, you won him over.
You won me over as someone I disliked.
That might be one of the better compliments I've ever received. Yeah. And ironically, it hinges on being disliked even erroneously in the first place, which is, that's really great.
Yeah.
I should try to do that. You know, when I meet someone first at work, like before they've heard any of my work, I should try to sort of rub them the wrong way then to see if I can, you know, keep working on that skill.
Costanza thing. Yeah, you got to bring them back. Kev, you take over. I want to just sit back and listen to you guys talk about the stuff.
Well, I mean, this is mostly like, at least for the rush hour, I won't speak for Sports Open Line, so you can tease Sports Open Line if you'd like.
Yeah.
As to the things you have planned and what you want to do. Because normally, like, what Matt and I do is I will take care of planning Redbird Rush Hour and then leave Matt with Sports Open Line, because two of those things is too much. So if you want to tease what you're looking at, we're all baseball in the Redbird Rush Hour, and obviously, some all-star related things like J.J. Weatherholt and the Future Stars game and some other things, but not much there. Mostly like looking ahead to the second half. The stuff we mentioned, Dave, earlier about getting to the trade deadline. Are you buyer, seller, or holder? Probably hold.
And we did a poll last night.
Yeah,
we put a Twitter poll online. And yeah, the last I would have checked, it was probably like 7:30, 7:45 as we were wrapping up the show. And I was really surprised. The three options were buy, sell, or don't know yet. And I think you could make a case for either of the bottom two. I think if you're voting full on buy at this stage, I mean, I don't know what's going through your mind when you're doing it, but like maybe you're just meaning like a little bit here and there. Maybe what you really mean is don't sell.
Yeah.
But I was we were around 70% sell the entire time, and then 15 or so percent buy and not sure yet, you know, depending on when it was at the poll. And this was 500 plus responses by the end.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised to see the fan base still so certain that that was their preferred outcome.
I think it's fair. I don't think it's necessarily 100%. Like if I'm in charge, my goal would be to do both. Yeah. I would be trying to sell certain things to buy others, right? I don't want to just traditionally sell because I'm too close. Yeah. Unless the next 2 weeks suck. If you go 2-8 in the next 2 weeks, then I might be more apt to go, if I'm 7 games out of the wild card, I think I'm going to sell my upcoming free agents and then try to fill, you know, backfill with my younger guys. That's a different thing. If I go 8-2, man, I need a reliever. I might even be looking at a starter. I might look for a right-handed bat. But again, nothing is going to come at the expense of the guys, the prospects you need to keep.
Right.
Right. Nothing is going to be done. And I don't care what happens. They could win every game between now and the deadline. Nothing is going to make them buy to the point that they're going to trade the young players that they think they need for the long term.
Who are who?
Guys like J.J. Weatherholt, Quinn Matthews, probably not Tink Hentz, although I'd be a little more open to that. The young catchers, Leo Bernal, Reynel Rodriguez, like they're not going to move those kinds of guys. I would say no matter what. I don't think this is a year where they're going to do that. And it's also fascinating, too, because I think what your poll showed, and I answered to it, I put don't know yet.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it's more on the sell side is I think people mostly look at this and say this team is not going to win in the playoffs.
Right.
Even if they make it, you don't have the rotation to beat the Dodgers, to beat, the Mets, any of the top teams that are going to be there, because your number one is good. But he's really a 2 or a 3 on the Dodgers. He's a 2 or a 3 on the Mets. He's not the number one on any of the other top teams that you're going to face or likely to face. So, but Sonny's really good. You can count on Sonny. We have no idea what Liberatore is going to be in 2 months. He's never done this before. He's never pitched 6 months in the major leagues. And even in the minor leagues, I think his career high was something like 130 innings. So he's going to be pushing into new territory. You have no idea what you're getting from Pallante. And clearly, Matz and Fetty, we're all talking about taking him out of the rotation. So I think fans look at that and go, that rotation's not winning in the postseason. Let's sell.
And it's not. And yeah, I think that's one of the things we talked about is what's the best case for the Cardinals would be win the division and then hope and pray. Right? I mean, that would be the best case. And I'm not saying winning the division.
Hot, right.
I'm not saying that winning the division is not a significant accomplishment, because it is. And I think it's just more enjoyable to live in St. Louis and follow the Cardinals and certainly do our jobs when August and September has anything on the line. Right? I'm not saying that being a good competitive baseball team is a bad thing or easy to do or any of that. But ultimately, the goal is to win the World Series. And I don't know that there's anything the Cardinals could do at the deadline that could make them a viable World Series contender this year. And if there was, it probably wouldn't be advisable. It'd probably involve giving up way too much. The other thing that you mentioned, and we talked about this quite a bit last night, that I think is going to be really tricky for John Mozeliak in terms of how they approach this deadline, is that, like you said, the next 2 weeks are so important, and you can gain so much information between now and July 30th. At the same time, they're playing Arizona, Colorado, San Diego, and Miami. Only one of their next four opponents has a record better than 500.
Yeah.
And one of them is the worst team in baseball in Colorado. It is not out of the realm of possibility the Cardinals win 9 or 10 of those 13 games between now and the deadline and put themselves in, on paper, a much better position, even into a wild card spot. But then they turn around and their first five opponents after the deadline, San Diego, the Dodgers, the Cubs, Colorado, and the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah.
So wouldn't it be ironic if the Cardinals win 10 of their next 13, Mozeliak says, well, I can't trade Helsley now. I'm in a playoff spot. I'm going to get crushed in this clubhouse. I'm going to get crushed in the media, crushed by the fans. And then they turn around in the next five series and go 5-10, and they're right back out of the playoffs. And we're saying, why didn't you trade Helsley?
Yeah, and then the counter to the buy-sell thing, like last year as an example, and this is a fluke. This is not a common thing. But last year at the trade deadline, Detroit sold. They traded away relievers. They traded away Jack Flaherty. And then they went on a two-month run and made the playoffs. Right? Like, that can happen. And I could actually see it with this team for one reason. Because I think some of the guys that would go out can be replaced by better guys. Hmm. Not Helsley. You don't have a better closer than that. Even though he's not been what he was last year. You don't have a closer candidate. You don't have somebody waiting better than Maton. But if you're going to move off of the rotation, or if you're going to move, say, Lars Nootbaar to get some good pieces in return, which is a possibility. I saw a report from, I don't remember from who, but it was a legitimate baseball guy who's like, the Dodgers love Lars Nootbaar.
Yeah.
And that's a team that you might be able to get a close to the major leagues type pitcher, like an Emmett Sheehan or somebody along those lines that's been a top prospect, but they have so many pitchers and they can't use them all moving into the future. They could look at a guy like Nootbaar and be like, that's our left fielder for the next few years, and we don't care if he bats eighth.
Yeah,
we don't care if he bats seventh. It doesn't matter. We like his tools. We think we can fix him. We'll give you this for that. Like, that's something that would make a lot of sense. And that actually is something that if you're doing something like that, you might actually get a little bit better and clear some of that playing time that we're going to talk about. Because part of the problem is you don't have room for everybody. How do you get all of your guys in the lineup? Ollie was just talking about this the other day. That, you know, when you get when Walker comes back, which is probably going to be a bit because he's terrible right now. He's been awful in Double A on his rehab assignment. You still have that same problem you had 2 months ago, which is really, where does anybody play? Where's Nolan Gorman play if Herrera is the DH every day? Well, he's going to have to play second base. That means Donovan's got to play the outfield. Well, that means either Nootbaar or Walker got to come out, or Scott has to come out. And there it becomes this giant cluster of players. You don't really have a good, easy answer. A trade could level that out, settle you in, and then you get something else in return that might be able to help you.
Can I ask you guys, I like Jordan Walker a lot. Just personally, I like him. But what is it empirically about him, as opposed to a fear of doing another Rosarena? What is it empirically about him that makes him so off limits for a trade?
Two things. It's the physical tools and it's the age. He's only 23. Right. I mean, again, we've talked about this a million times, because and the reason I use Aaron Judge as the comp for Walker is that physically they're similar. It doesn't mean that I think he's going to be Aaron Judge. But at age 23, Aaron Judge had not even sniffed the major leagues yet. You know, he was still in Double A. He didn't hit the major leagues for a taster until he was 24, and his first full season was age 25. And the tools, we're talking about a guy whose bat speed ranks in the top 2%, 3% of all of Major League Baseball. His average exit velo ranks in the top 10, 15% of all of baseball. He's a plus runner. He's got one of the strongest position player arms. Like, physically, he's got everything. He just doesn't have the ability to hit breaking stuff or lay off the breaking stuff that he can't hit. So it's a fixable thing when you're thinking about, like, physically he can do things that other people can't. He hits it harder and farther than most people can. When he hits it in the air. he throws it faster. He runs well. I mean, look, think about this. He's in the top 15% of sprint speed in baseball at 6'6", 260.
So he's a specimen.
So he's a physical unicorn. So that's why you're hesitant to do anything, because if somebody else unlocks his ability to lay off the pitches he can't handle and hit the ball in the air, you're going to look at a guy hitting 40 home runs and you're gonna be like, dang, we gave up on that guy. And that's why they won't do it.
Good explanation.
Certainly not now, but doesn't mean you wouldn't do something in a blockbuster in the offseason where you're like, we're going to go get, I don't know. I don't want to throw in a name because I don't want to put anything unrealistic out there. But let's say a cost-controlled number two starter who's super talented, you probably would include him in that kind of a deal if it was a possibility. But I don't think you want to take that risk at this point for a 23-year-old. You've got time. Even if the rest of this year stinks, he can go into next year and have to be in an earn-it role where he has to earn playing time and the physical tools just have to develop. But it's a weird situation because you've already seen him a lot. It's not your typical 23-year-old that's getting their first look. He's been up since he was 20.
How do you compare and contrast, not one's tall and one short, but Jordan Walker and Victor Scott II as far as the same sort of analysis?
Yeah, the biggest difference is that Walker is a plus-plus-plus defender, so he's helping you now by catching everything that gets hit into center field. But he's got a lot of the same problems. I threw this out there a little bit ago, and I wanted to. I may talk about this. Maybe we may do this tonight, maybe not. But I'm not sure Jordan Walker is an everyday player. I'm not sure he's not a fourth outfielder. When I look at like the performance for 4 months so far this year, well, almost 4 months, and then the offensive performance, and then you look at like the underlying, like his bat speed's not great. He doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't draw a ton of walks. He's better at these things than he was a year ago, but right now his offense is not that of a starting player. And I'm okay with continuing it for this year. I'm okay with continuing. Hey, he gets on a hot run for the next 2 months. You might say, all right, he's slightly below average, but we can deal with that for plus defense, right? Yeah. But how many places can you sacrifice offense for defense in the same lineup? Because you're doing it at catcher. You're doing it at third base. And third base is a hard contract to move. And look, I mean, Nolan is not an automatic out as a hitter, but he's not what he was. He's definitely, I haven't looked at it the last couple of days, but he's around league average offensively.
Do you have any optimism around, I mean, this is getting a little away from your question, but do you have any optimism around Nolan Arenado getting the time off that he's had as he's been dealing with his finger and now getting what it'll be about a week straight off with the couple of off days he took going into the break and then getting the 4 days in the break? Because back in the very early part of the season, we were saying, it's not like you're watching Nolan Arenado and thinking he looks 28 again, but the bat speed was definitely in a different place than it was last year, and I was feeling very encouraged, and then it seems like the wear and tear of the season, and in particular the finger, has just derailed him again.
I don't know if it was if it's the finger directly related to like the decline in bat speed, but the bat speed has gone down to the point now where it's not much better than last year.
Right.
And, you know, look, I looked at it. He is below average. Like his 6% below average this year. He was 1% above average last year, 8% above average the year before that, and 50% above average the year before that. So it's a pretty continuing trend of down. I don't think you're turning that around. And again, not to say that it can't be league average, right? Going up 6% is not that big of a deal. But the point is, can you have three spots where offense is average or below and it's only defense? I'm not sure you can.
So the two of you for Rush Hour, yep, and then Nate for Sports Open Line. Excellent. Quick break. Right back. DGS.
I hate to see you go. Why don't we do it in the road?
Welcome back, guys. DGS talking some sports.
Sports here. Nate Gatter is with us. He and Wheeler will be doing the Rush Hour, and then Nate will be doing Sports Open Line after that. So I know you're a big soccer guy, big City SC guy. I'm a big soccer guy. I've not adopted the team yet. I haven't been to a game yet. I certainly root for them, root for the home teams. What's going on? Just give me an overview picture.
Well, I mean, things are still not good, right? I think the answer is that they kind of have drifted away. Sort of, we were talking in the break about how the Cardinals are drifting a little bit, and they have drifted for the last few years. I think City started to drift out of nowhere. And it's so weird because I think no matter what you think of any particular player, any particular move, City's biggest strength as an expansion team, and the reason they were able to succeed so quickly, is that they had a very strong identity that everybody understood from top to bottom in the club. And that was the whole idea behind, we're going to build everything sort of in Lutz Van Nistelrooy's image. The whole club from the top down is going to be uniform. We're going to teach the 16-year-old academy kids to play the same way we're going to want them to play ultimately if they make it to the first team. And they started to drift away from that when they let Bradley Carnell go and they wanted to make some tweaks because it wasn't working so well. And I can understand why the Carnell system of just press, 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 press wasn't working because guys were getting hurt left and right. Legs were breaking down. I don't know if you can look. That system comes from Germany, and a guy named Ralf Rangnick kind of popularized it. And it's based in Europe, and they were big European teams are used to having a lot more depth than what MLS teams have because they don't have the really stringent and sort of arbitrary salary cap rules and distinctions that MLS has. And so you just. MLS has a few guys on the team. So, for example, City have a handful of guys making seven figures, a couple who are making like around $2 million a year. And then the last couple guys on their bench for any given game are making like 70 grand, right? Like, or they're 15 years old. So the drop off is just huge from who are your top line starters to who are your last couple guys who might get in the game. And those guys have to play a lot of minutes then in the middle part of the year if your top five guys are all getting hurt. So I understood why they wanted to get away from that. I never understood why they went to Olaf Melberg. His numbers are just not good. His resume is not good. He had a very, very impressive playing career. His managerial career just is not very impressive. And then, apparently, this is reading between the lines a little bit, but from the press conference after they let him go, if you listen to Diego Gigliani and Lutz Van Nistelrooy when they're answering questions about why were you guys playing sitting so deep? Where did the City identity go? The impression I got was that he told them he was going to more or less tweak their system and play in their system, and then he just didn't do it. And they just hired a guy who didn't do what he said he was going to do going into getting the job. And I don't know what you're really supposed to do about that. Maybe that's not their fault. I mean, you can only control so much if some person looks you in the eye and says, yeah, I'm on board with that, and then isn't. But it really is not a good look, and they absolutely need to get this next hire right because, again, the entire club has been built around Lutz Van Nistelrooy. If this is going to be his third and final chance at hiring the first team manager, and if this next guy doesn't work out, whether it's the interim guy, David Critchley, or more likely an outside candidate they hire at the end of the year. If that guy doesn't work out, Carolyn Kindle's going to have no choice but to clean out the entire thing because at that point, somebody else needs to be making the decisions at the top.